You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 85, Friday, January 27th, the last podcast episode in January this year. Thank God. I'm Van Burnett. You guys can follow us on Twitter at Wins Above Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Van underscore verified. And joined, as always, by Steve Gisuelli at Stav8818. We got an exciting show today, folks, because we're talking prospects for redraft leagues. And in general, we just got the baseball spirit in the air. It is PitchCon week. If you guys have not been tuning in, we are in the midst of the four-day run. All proceeds go to ALS charity, and you guys can find it all. Pitcherless.com/PitchCon. You know, Steve, I had the Mexico trip. I had a crazy work pitch. I was telling you my kind of life outside of fantasy baseball was nuts this year, so I didn't want to overload the plate. But you, on the other hand, were on PitchCon today, so you're in rhythm. And wanted to say, how's it going to you? Welcome you to the show before we introduce a very special guest tonight.
Yeah, it's good. It's kind of, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but PitchCon is like the start of fantasy baseball season. It's at least now that it's become, you know, that's been a popular thing, getting more and more popular each year, and obviously for a great cause. But it's kind of like, all right, I'm ready to go. Like today, I doing a podcast, did a panel with Dave Swan, and you know, I'm just in the mode now. Like it's ready to go. Like, you know, all the other podcasts are putting out more frequent episodes. I'm starting to get really fired up, you know, going to start signing up for some more drafts. I know I've kind of been at least telling myself to have less leagues. I know the three of us are in a draft right now. Yeah. So I guess I don't know how accurate that actually is, but hey, that's like a startup dynasty league that we'll get into, but it's exciting. I'm ready to go. It seems like it's fantasy baseball season.
Yeah, who needs the Super Bowl? PitchCon is kicking us off. And Steve, since you've alluded to our guest multiple times, we got to introduce Shelly Verstraete, who is joining us. Shelly is doing so much in the industry, and everyone loves her work. You guys can follow her on Twitter at ShellyV_643. But Shelly's a contributor at NBC Sports Edge, Baseball HQ, and a manager here at PitcherList as well. Shelly, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for coming on. Even when, you know, you and I were both kind of swamped to do PitchCon, we feel blessed to have you on the show. Thank you, Shelly.
Yeah, I'm just really honored. I mean, I'm just glad to be on the pod. My 9-to-5 has been like pretty swamped. And unfortunately, I could not do PitchCon, but I've been kind of like watching all of the presentations on the periphery. But I'm glad to be on the pod with you guys.
Oh, we're glad to have you. And, you know, we've been kind of saving this topic of prospects for redraft leagues and looking for the perfect guest. And we'll get into it all. We just did our dynasty draft with minors, kind of a minors draft as part of that. So a lot of these names are top of mind for us. But yeah, PitchCon, it's very exciting. You guys got to go check it out. And if you missed any of the content today, and you can see the schedule of all the topics, you know, right before this, I was cracking up watching Paul Spohr introduce Scott White. It's just like the Marvel universe of fantasy baseball industry. And you guys can
fantasy multiverse. Yeah.
The multiverse. Yeah. And you can find anything that you missed the day after on Twitch, or next week we'll be uploading everything to YouTube as well. But Steve, before we jump in head first on the prospects for redraft, give us a quick, you know, recap of how it went today. This is your second time recording.
Yeah. It's been a day. It fit in between picking up my daughter from daycare, you know, doing bedtime. There was two fantasy podcasts. Shout out to my wife for, you know, helping me and letting me be able to keep my hobbies despite, you know, us having a 7-month-old. But
thanks, Lauren.
Yeah. It was a ton of fun. I was on a panel with Dave Swan and Eric Dadham, both contributors here at PitcherList. Dave Swan, obviously a fantasy manager. Eric Dadham does a lot of the bullpen stuff, does reliever ranks in season. And we did a topic on our fades. So don't want to spoil it too much. If you didn't want to see it, you know, go check it out on YouTube, go through a link, do it, you know, donate, for a great cause. All of the proceeds this year are going to, support ALS and research ALS. So that's obviously amazing. Like, it's not like, you know, 75, the fact that all of them are going directly to that great cause is, you know, it's something that I'm proud to be a part of. It's really special. And then obviously it's a lot of fun to talk fantasy baseball. I know Spora was active in our chat. We were talking about fades, and you know, I even threw out, I compared Tristan McKenzie's body type, I called it Paul Sporoian. So, he got a kick out of that too. So it was a lot of fun. Shout out to Dave and then for, Dave and Eric for being part of it. It was a lot of fun. So, it really put me in the mood of for fantasy season, which is kind of
awesome.
Exciting.
Yeah. That's awesome to have a kickoff. And Shelley, just in general for you, I mean, you know, I talk about it too sometimes. And for people who it's not, you know, your 9 to 5, you know, you can at times kind of experience like fatigue or just there's so much out there. But I look at someone like you who's, you know, doing it across multiple sites and you have your hand in so many activities. You know, how do you keep up in the off season? Like, you know, talk about that and then just
prospects,
you know,
everything. Too, right? Like that's just like, there's, it's that never stops. Like there's always like
it's an ocean of players.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So talk about your process, Shelley. And also we got to hear kind of what you're working on. If there's anything, our listeners need to be aware of that's coming up, just talk to us about Shelley's world for a minute.
Yeah. Shelley's world. I don't know. I just honestly, like, when it comes to prospects, I just like really get into a groove into the season, like minor league stuff and major league stuff. I just get like all in. I am looking at box scores throughout, you know, the season, and I'm just like finding like minor league guys that I really like, and then going to, you know, Baseball America or, you know, mm-hmm. you know, Fangraphs, and just like reading up about these guys. And I just get like really excited. But what I'm doing now, honestly, is just digesting all of these particular lists that all of these particular like dynasty lists that I don't have, you know, the opportunity to watch all of these players. And I'm just reading, mm-hmm. just trying to grab all the little nuggets here and there. So that's basically what I'm doing right now.
It awesome. Does seem so like it's list season, right? Like everyone's top 100 comes out now.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask. So like, you know, are we, it's an ever evolving kind of process. Like I know we just had a draft, Shelley, like, do you feel at this point, your opinions are kind of made up, or are you like me where it's kind of like, I feel like I'm discovering my draft season process all the way up to like early March. Like, do you feel like you've kind of got your book figured out for how you're approaching drafts, or is it still kind of early in the game for you being that it is January?
Honestly, it's still early in the game. I mean, I know that we did like a minor league draft, and I have, you know, my favorite players that I like that might not be high up on lists, but I'm just like really high on, just based on, you know, reports that I've read and people who I've talked to. And I'm just like a really big fan of these particular guys. But then when it comes like to the major league guys, I'm just starting to, you know, dip mm-hmm. my toe into kind of like redraft season. I'm in mm-hmm. my first DC this nice. Right now.
Nice.
I'm just kind of like dipping my toe into it, and just kind of feeling what's going on there.
Love it. Yeah, that makes me feel good, because I, you know, Steve, I feel like we always are, by the end of February, we have a pretty good idea of who our guys are. But right now it's just like the beginning of it. So
yeah, it's the early stages. Yeah,
but this is a great topic, because Shelley is definitely plugged in, especially with the minor league guys. And, you know, whether it's dynasty or particularly for redraft is what we're going to focus on today's show. We're going to look at if it's worth paying up for some of the top end blue chip guys, and then definitely focus on a handful of players in the later rounds where you're looking for impact. You're looking for guys that could really, you know, surge up the draft boards next season, and you're getting all the profit this year. We'll spend a minute looking at pitchers as well. We know it's always kind of a race to find value late in the game for pitchers, and the young guys can be a great way to do that. I mean, the names through the years, Zach Gallen, last year Spencer Strider, just names that seemingly pop up and can change your entire season. So we'll talk about some arms as well. But we got so much to get into. Let's jump right in with the blue chip guys. And it starts with Corbin Carroll, who's got an ADP of 73. And Carroll, man, he's so much fun to watch. Just the speed is just sensational. I know for like projections right now, ATC's got him actually at 17 homers, 17 steals in 134 games. I don't know about the power. I would hammer the over on 17 steals. But Shelley, starting off with you, talk about Corbin Carroll, especially at this price. Is this someone you think is going to be a value? What's your overall opinion on Corbin Carroll? Let's just kind of hear your take on the most expensive of these youngsters.
Yeah, honestly, as a player, I absolutely love Corbin Carroll. Scouts reports that I've read that this guy is a legit gamer. He is all in on helping his teammates. He's in with all of his teammates in the gym, trying to get them better. I love him as a player. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, with an ADP of 73, I mean, it scares me a bit. It's very steep because I was, like, looking at last year's ADP, and Bobby Witt Jr. was going 87. And if Carroll is going 73 already, I mean, again, I love Carroll. I really do. But I think that we are just, as a community, we're just a bit too high on him. Because, I mean, it's not like he's on, like, the greatest team. I mean, I love what the Diamondbacks are doing, right? They kind of remind me of the Baltimore Orioles of the NL, right? Like, they have, like, a really intriguing young team. But I don't think that 73 is, like, way too high. Because, I mean, where are you going to get those runs? Where are you going to get those RBIs? I can totally dream on Corbin Carroll as a player. I just don't think 73 is, like, way too high. And I don't think that I'm really going to be – sadly, I don't think I'm going to have him on a lot of my redraft teams if he's going currently right now.
Yeah, Steve, I want to hear where you're at.
So Carroll played 32 games last year, got 115 at-bats, right? I think he came up the end of August. And he did well. I mean, he hit 260, 330, 500, 830 OPS, 130 WRC+, popped four homers, only had two steals, but whatever. That was, you know, a successful MLB debut. If he hit 190 and had two homers and two steals, how much lower would his ADP be, right?
It'd be 230.
So that's how many difference that's what, four hits, right? Like, what are we talking about here? And I think that because that line looks good and that small sample was pretty good and the power was there and there was that video of him going first to third and like the fastest sprint speed ever, and like that went viral on Twitter, which, you know, I popped for too and got super excited about. It's just, I don't understand. I think that is telling that he would probably be at least 50 picks later had he had a little bit less luck and didn't have the success in this small sample in September. Again, I love Corbin Carroll. I stashed him all year last year in a redraft league in like the one minor slot we had, or NA slot that we had, right? But if you're taking him at ADP 73, you basically need him to get like 30 steals, hit at least 250, and pop 10 to 15 homers, right? Like, you need him to have his 80th percentile outcome at least. I didn't have any shares of Bobby Witt last year because the cost was just too high. And I don't know, was that wrong? Like, you know, I don't know if that process was wrong. You know, he had a good year. He went 20-30, which, you know, Carroll probably could do. I don't know maybe if the power is there, but it's just such a high price to pay, right? Who else is going around him? Like, you know, you could take Cedric Mullins, who is essentially like guaranteed to do what you're hoping Carroll does, right? Like right around there. Like, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's there's much safer options, and I think, you know, proven options at least at that price. You know, it's hard because I do love Carroll. He's an extremely exciting player, but you know, are you going to go Carroll, or you know, you can go
Eloy, George yeah, Springer,
Xander Bogaerts, know. You know, these yeah. guys that are proven. Starling Marte, I know he has the injury, but like if you need steals, like what's a safer play than that, you know?
Yeah, Bobby Witt's a good name to throw out because, you know, that's obviously the good story, and you're hoping for the, you know, the boom bust, you're hoping for the boom, and he definitely has that on the base paths. 31 steals in just 91 games across a couple levels in high minors last year. So it's there, and he's slated to lead off, but, you know, there could even be some platoon stuff. So I'm with you guys outside of my home league that has ridiculous categories like triples and singles. I don't think I'll be interested in Corbin Carroll. Let's shift over to an Oriole, though, Shelley, which you mentioned, just the awesome rebuild, the excitement going on out there. And Gunnar Henderson is at the helm there, slated to hit third in that lineup, and an ADP of 92. You're getting a couple rounds later than Corbin Carroll. And Gunnar Henderson, you know, he's been a tough one for me to put my finger on because I recognize the talent as like a baseball player. But when I look at the numbers he's posted and his projections, it seems like it's, you know, he's above average in several departments, but he's not like, you know, a 40 homer guy or a 30 steal guy, or he's not batting 310. So, you know, it's kind of like the stuff and things guy, which is odd for a rookie that has helium. But I'm curious your take on Gunnar Henderson and kind of what you see in the player, and also the, if you're going to be interested in having any shares of Gunnar Henderson.
Yeah, Henderson is a tad bit different for me, just from a redraft standpoint. Honestly, from a dynasty standpoint, I think Carroll and Henderson are quite comparable. I think that while they provide different categories, I think that they are both like really, really good players. But from a redraft standpoint, third base is kind of, yeah. I mean, honestly, it's
a great point.
It's at this point where Bregman and Henderson are kind of at. And I kind of lean towards Bregman, but Henderson, he's like at that last guy that
there's a big drop off right after Henderson. If you don't have a third baseman before Henderson, it's like, uh-oh.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is what it kind of makes me kind of want to go towards drafting. I would be more comfortable drafting Henderson than Carroll because, again, that gap, I'm like, okay, I miss Bregman, I miss Arenado. I need to get a third baseman. Let me just grab Henderson here so I'm not stuck with, you know, the Suarez, the Max Muncies of the world,
right? Do you think Henderson's floor is high enough that you feel comfortable if you have to take Henderson as like a parachute third baseman? Like are you okay? You're considering him in that tier, right? Like you would be you think he could provide the value, even though it is a somewhat pricey pick.
Yeah. I mean, I do agree that it is a pricey pick, but I'm willing, if I have not gotten a third baseman at that point, I'm willing to just take a gamble there with the, you know, the upside of Henderson.
Yeah. And, you know, he's a guy who has been great at taking walks throughout his minor league career. You know, he's typically double digits there. The strikeout rate kind of hovers mid-20s, but you'll take it. You know, ATC projection has meant 19 homers, 10 steals across 141 games. So definitely the volume there. And we know what the Orioles are doing. They're going for it with Adley, with Henderson, Mullins, as you mentioned, Steve. So fun team to watch this year, which is great to say for the Orioles. And Steve, on your side, I mean, what are your thoughts? Do you see yourself having any shares? He's a guy that we haven't really come to a decision on, at least on the show.
I've been kind of afraid, right? Like, I've been trying to grab Arenado. I've been keeping Bregman in mind as like a fallback option, and I've been kind of undecided. It's like, do I want Anderson? Am I comfortable enough, or should I just wait and try and find a value in like the next tier, which is lower? But, you know, I think, you know, the fact that Shelley endorsed it makes me a little bit more comfortable, honestly. But I think, you know, the Orioles are going to be better this year. They were, you know, surprisingly pretty good last year. That lineup's pretty good. And, you know, it was another thing. I kind of poo-pooed Cal because of this, but, you know, he held his own. Like, he did have a better barrel rate. You know, Cal's was only 5%. Henderson's was 10%. I know, extremely small sample, but hey, you know, this is what we have for them. So I'm definitely more comfortable, and I could see myself, if, you know, Arenado goes, if Bregman goes, if I don't get like Machado or something in the second round, I'm going to be more comfortable grabbing Henderson, as long as his ADP doesn't shoot up to like that Cal range. I think if he stays at that 90-ish range, which I don't know with these prospects, you know, if he has a good spring or something, that's going to shoot up really, really quickly. At this price, yeah, I'm comfortable taking him as a third base option.
Yeah, really, really good points. And like Shelley mentioned, like, Carroll's at 73 right now. Yeah. I think we would all bet that Carroll easily gets in the top 65 by the time we're mid-March, because he has the sizzle, right? With the speed, he could steal 40 bags. Henderson, you know, it's almost against what we're used to with a young player, because you have to reach, and typically it's such a large range of outcomes. But, you know, looking at what he's done throughout the minors and kind of looking at his profile, it seems like it's a little bit more of a high floor guy, but maybe not quite the ceiling. Could be wrong there, for him to, you know, explode and be like a first, second round guy next year. But yeah, I'm with you. I think, in a weird way, for a rookie, if he falls, I would be fine taking him. Or if I can get him at that value and I need a third baseman, I'd be fine taking him. But me personally, I don't think I'm necessarily going to reach, hoping to get a third baseman before then, like we've talked about a lot. So that's Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson. We will get into more names in a minute, but first we are going to take our first ad break, and we are right back. Okay, so we've got some late round values and a lot of names to get through. So we can do these a little bit quicker, kind of popcorn, so that we don't steal Shelley for 4 hours tonight. But the first one is one we really liked last year, which is Vaughn Grissom. And that ADP is 189. He was another one, along with Michael Harris II, that the Braves brought up straight from AA. So leapfrogging AAA, and he only played 22 games at AA. So Grissom was super green when he came up into the majors, but he definitely held his own in 41 games, hit 291, five homers, five steals. If you remember, a lot of that happened early on and people were rushing to the wire. And then he definitely cooled off. I think they actually benched him, right, Steve, in the playoffs, just as a rest? Or did they
leave him off? Albies came back from injury, so that's right. Think they played him a little bit less. Did they even like play him in the outfield too at one point, or are they talking about that?
Yeah, it got weird down the stretch.
Though. It did. So, but I mean, with Swanson gone, like, this is, you know,
it's his spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And ATC's got him projected for 124 games. You could probably bet the over on that. Good power speed guy, projected for 14 homers, 16 steals, and a 277 average. Put all that in the Braves lineup, and ADP 189 at least has my attention. But Shelley, what do you see with Vaughn Grissom? Is this a player that you're kind of circling on your draft boards this year?
Honestly, not really. I mean, with the depth of shortstops and kind of like the lack of depth of second baseman, I'm just trying to grab as many shortstops as I can. And when it comes to Vaughn Grissom, like, he is, you know, currently, you know, on Fangraphs, he is projected to hit ninth. And I just, that, like, that late season swoon just kind of, like, put me off just a tad bit. And I don't know. I would rather take my shots at another shortstop other than Von Grissom. I think that he's a fine player, but just him hitting ninth, that just, you know, just limits those vital plate appearances.
Yeah, it does. And they're trying to use him as kind of that, you know, the mini leadoff like we've talked about. So he might get some runs with the top of the order right behind him. But yeah, to your point, I mean, some names going before him, Jonathan India, Tyro Estrada. I think, you know, he's got kind of a, you know, the upside where I think I might be interested at that range. And if it's not working out, hope I can backfill. But it is a risky play for how little we saw of him. Steve, have you formulated an opinion on Grissom for this draft season?
I'm kind of with Shelley that late season, you know, where it seemed like the league figured him out, kind of has turned me off. However, that kind of happened with Michael Harris. If you remember, like right after the All-Star break, he started to dip a little bit. It's like, all right, here we go. You know, like the lead's figured out. He's got to make an adjustment back. And with Harris, he did, and was really good the rest of the way. With Grisham, we just haven't seen that yet. So that could be coming. I just don't think that this is a price that you want to pay to still have to find out if he made that adjustment or still has to make that adjustment, you know, back to whatever the league did to sort of figure him out, you know. Guys going around him, you know, even if you want to use him as a second base, which I think he should have from last year, it's like Brandon Lau, Jonathan India, Whit Merrifield, you know, Jeff McNeil. Yeah. Even guys like Kettle Marte and Gavin Lux, you know, are a round or two later and kind of have, I think, maybe just as much. It's just, you know, a different type of upside with kind of like a bounce back from Marte and injury, and Lux like a post hype breakout. So it's almost priced a little bit too high to kind of be this the value. I think it's, you know, in a 15 teamer, it's still a 12th round pick, you know, that's not that cheap. So, you know, guys like, you know, Oscar Gonzalez, Lars Nootbaar, even Alec Bohm, there's things to like about him there. You would take him before. So I think there's just some more proven guys that I would rather have. And, you know, he's going to be shortstop. Like Shelley said, like, it's a deep position. You're probably going to want to have at least one or two by the time you'll be picking Grisham. So you might be looking elsewhere. It's kind of like an awkward price for him.
Okay. Well, I'm going to bend, not break on this one, even though you two just body slammed my hopes and dreams with Von Grissom. But I do like the plate discipline with just like, you know, his strikeout rate was always under 20 in the minors. I like seeing that. Hoping the hit tool can get him on base and the top of that order can give him some good runs. Always an underrated stat, but let's keep rolling here. And we got a Red Sox guy for Shelley. So Tristan Casas, the top first base prospect on MLB Pipeline. It's a name that's been on the radar for a while. Steve, when we talked about potentially drafting him in our Dynasty mock, I remember you said, it feels like it's a boring pick. Yeah. Shelley, talk to us about Tristan Casas. I know there's not a ton to be excited about with this confusing Red Sox rebuild, if it is. But, you know, do you see that Casas is going to be a good redraft guy this year or dynasty long term? What are your thoughts overall on Casas?
I mean, honestly, I'm taking my homer cap off right now.
Okay.
I really do think that he is good for redraft and then also for dynasty. Because I think that for redraft, first base is extremely deep. You can wait very, very long. So currently, what, he is going
238, I think I have. So that's like, you know, round.
Yeah, so he's 20, going.
Round 15, 16, yeah.
Yeah, the 25th first baseman off the board. And if you're going to get a 25th position who is going to get everyday at bats because, you know, mm-hmm. they got rid of Eric Hosmer. And he has that prospect pedigree. And, you know, Fenway Park, you know, he could just pepper home runs and doubles off that monster. I think that is an extremely sneaky pick. Just wait on first base. Just get Tristan Casas. I love it.
Yeah, I think it's an underrated hit tool, really. Like, I know, yes. I think he's kind of projected at 240, but I always thought that he was had a better bat than that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, coming up through the minors, like, they have always said that he is, like, you know, they've said that he is, like, Joey Votto, which just makes me swoon. But, I mean, I don't think that he's going to be, like, that good, but he has that particular, like, hit tool. Like, he changes his bat position when he gets into two strikes. He chokes up on the bat just to put the ball in play, which is from a just
Ted a Ted Williams.
Exactly. It's just what I like to see. I do think that he is a really good hitter. When he came up last year for, like, that month in September, yeah, it wasn't that great, but he had a few bombs, which was, like, really exciting. And I just really do believe in the talent. And if you can get him, again, like, so late, if you can just wait on first base, just keep waiting and get him who can get everyday at bats, I love it.
Yeah, I do too. Steve, where do you fall with Tristan Casas?
Yeah, now it's starting to get in a range where it's like, all right, like, this is a flyer range. Like, it's late enough in the draft. And I think, you know, probably what I said to you in our dynasty draft when I was a quote unquote boring pick, like, I think that's good for fantasy value, right? Like, it's like Casas has been this top prospect forever. It hasn't clicked just yet. So there isn't this, like, super hype train around him. You know, he did hit 197, which I kind of talked about with Carol. Like, I think if, you know, if that September sample was 280 with five bombs, we'd probably be talking about Tristan Casas as a top 150 pick at least, because, you know, the Red Sox are kind of handing him that job, like Shelley said, with Hosmer gone. At a full stop in the minors, so, like, you know, taking out the 9-game sample in AAA and 2021, a 2-game sample in high A in 2019. He has never had a WRC plus below 127. Like, this guy can hit. So I really like it. And especially in deeper leagues, like Shelley said, even if you have a first baseman, like, this is an awesome pick for CI if you want to put him there. Like, it just looks like, you know, he's ready to go. I know he hit just 197, but it was still 120 WRC plus. He, you know, walked 20% of the time. I know it was just a 95 plate appearance sample, but hey, that's still a good amount of walks and only striking out 24% of the time for a guy with his raw power. You love to see that plate discipline.
Yeah, he's slated to hit seventh right now, but in that lineup, if it does kind of go his way, you could see him sliding up to maybe fifth and in front of, like, a Verdugo and Duvall. I really like it with Casas. I think the one thing is I know there were some reports about some knee issues, so that might be something to keep an eye on in spring training. Just, you know, make sure we get an understanding of where the health is at. But I think we're all systems go on Tristan Casas. Moving over to a couple catchers, and we got Logan Ohapi, who's a name with the LA Angels. If you guys have not heard of Logan Ohapi, I think he came up for just a few games at the end of last year, but, you know, Roster Resource has him as the starter. It should be a split with Max Stassi, but Ohapi's got a lot of helium right now in terms of prospect catchers, you know, along with Andy Rodriguez. He's one of those names at catcher that just seems to be climbing up everyone's boards. And Shelley, would love to hear your opinion on Logan Ohapi, just 22 years old. His ADP right now is 247, but he seems like an interesting guy who I know people like his defense. That might help him kind of increase the plate appearances. But what do you see from Ohapi from a fantasy standpoint?
Ohapi just kind of, like, you know, popped up on kind of like fantasy dynasty, you know, radars last year. He's always just been a guy who can, like, really, really hit. And, I mean, he just, like blossomed last year. You know, he hit, like, 15 bombs. Again, it was in Double A for the Phillies organization, and their Double A stadium is, you know, a bit hitter friendly. I'm a little bit cautious about the power, but I really do think that he should get most of the everyday at bats in the Angels, you know, starting out. But I'm a little bit concerned because Jeff Zimmerman with Rotographs with Mining the News, like he had like this like little blurb that there is a competition between Matt Theis and Logan Ohapi for, you know, an everyday playing spot, you know, coming out of spring training, which really scared me because I read that after I, you know, drafted Logan Ohapi as my second catcher and my first DC. So
you're watching closely. Yes.
Yes, exactly. But I really do think that he's better than Max Stassi. I think that he is better than Matt Theis. And I really, maybe the Angels are going to bite me in the butt again this year, but I really think that they look to be a competitive team. And I really do think that Logan Ohapi has a chance to just like, you know, really contribute for them.
They're trying to be, at least, right, with Renfro and yes. Ohapi. Yeah. They're trying to be. I mean, hey, I like a few of their signings. I fell victim to that last year though too. So, but it seems like with Ohtani's free agency coming up, like they have to give it a go at least until the deadline. So, if Ohapi's their best catcher, like they're going to play him, which I think he is. He also hit 11 home runs after he was traded to the Angels. I think it was. Was that the Brandon Marsh trade?
Brandon Marsh.
But Salt Lake, I think, is their AA, or that's your AAA. I forget, but I still think it's a pretty hitter-friendly environment, too. So he had two hitter-friendly environments. I think that's Reading in AA for Philly. That's super, super hitter-friendly. But still, hey, I mean, a 144 WRC plus in AA with the Phillies, and then a 194 WRC plus in a 29-game, 98 at-bat sample for the Angels AA team. So he hit 26 home runs across, you know, basically 104 games. So the power's there for sure, which is exciting, and a catcher this late. I imagine it's going to go one way or the other. Like, he's going to be the leader, right? And that ADP will probably shoot up, or it, you know, maybe it's good for us if or for drafters now if it's kind of like that competition to keep that cost down, and you kind of just bet on the skills, not role, right? Like the old LeBron Shadler adage, and hope that Ohapi gets that role. But I like him. I think it's an interesting debate between this and the next catcher that we have listed here. Not to steal your job there and do a good segue,
Hey, you're just saving me breath, Steve. I was going to keep it with you and just say Gabriel Moreno, I feel like, is a name you've brought up in the past. Just 10 picks after Logan Ohapi at 257 for the D-backs. And Moreno, talk about a great hit tool. This is a guy who's projected out at 275 batting average on ATC. And yeah, he kind of struggled over 25 games last year, but a lot of people like the bat here. Steve, between these two, do you have interest in one over the other? And then would love to hear from Shelley on that same question.
I kind of lean Moreno just because I feel like his prospect pedigree has just been a little bit shinier and higher. And, you know, a 60-70 hit tool for a catcher is just, you know, you automatically, like, you know, obviously – it's a steep comparison, but you think like Joe Mauer, like, you know, that's the 99th percentile outcome for him. But it just is exciting when you have a guy that at least this high in the minors sticks behind the plate, and then at the major league level sticks behind the plate, that has that good of a hit tool. It's pretty exciting. I mean, Toronto, I think, kind of just made that deal because they have Kirk and also Jansen, who are two really good catchers and kind of set there, but it was like an embarrassment of riches at that catcher, and they kind of cashed in. I don't think that's an indictment on Moreno. And I think it's good for his fantasy value. Like, it seems like there's probably more of a direct path, less competition for Moreno, right? I know they have Carson Kelly. Mm-hmm. Is Carson Kelly still there in Arizona?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like he's also hurt for 3/4 of the year every year anyway. But, you know, I mean, Varsho got some time behind the plate last year, and that was probably while he was hurt, but while Kelly was hurt. But I think Moreno is kind of one of my favorite, like, hitting prospects, period, just because he's that good of a hitter at catcher. But we'll see what Shelley has to say and, you know, make her choose.
I was just about to say, Moreno. I hope Shelley just comes in and levels you here. Shelley, what do you think on Moreno?
Honestly, I love Moreno. I really do. I think that he is just a freaking great hitter. I don't know how much power there is going to be there. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of like that bat to ball guy, just extreme, you know, great average type of guy. I don't think that there's going to be a lot of power there. And then knowing that Carson Kelly is currently penciled in as their everyday catcher at start, I mean, I think it's kind of like the, you know, the same thing with Logan Ahapi. Like, if Moreno, you know, starts out as, you know, the first catcher for the Diamondbacks, I'm all in. Same thing with Ohapi. But I just don't think that either team is going to do that. And it kind of scares me a bit. But honestly, if I were to put Logan Ahapi or Gabriel Moreno, like pick one for like long term, it would definitely be Moreno. I trust his bat to ball skills. I trust just everything from him versus Logan Ahapi. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's good way to sum it up is, you know, watch the position battles there, because like you guys said, it's might be 50-50 split, but if there's an injury or if one of them's, you know, just tearing the cover off the ball in spring training, definitely a tiebreaker there. But yeah, I'm with you guys. I'll lean Moreno with the hit tool. Another hit tool guy down in Coors with the Rockies, Ezekiel Tovar, is another name I've heard a lot this offseason that was not on my radar. Just 21 years old, ADP 263. There's always going to be a little bit of a Coors hype factor for the shortstop here that's slated to be their everyday shortstop and projected to hit 273, 14 homers, 10 steals, a little power speed. Shelley, do you have interest in Tovar? Anything you want to add about the Rockies shortstop?
I've been a Tovar fan for a while. I just really am upset that he plays for the Rockies, because he's projected to hit ninth in a really bad lineup. And you just, as much as I love the dude, you really can't feel comfortable drafting someone who is projected to hit ninth.
Like, and Coors and the Rockies just balances out, because you know they're going to screw something up.
It's
right?
So exciting to have a guy potentially play half of his games at Colorado as a hitter, but then it's also frightening that it's the Rockies that are in charge of him.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I love the dude, and maybe a couple years down the road, maybe I'll be more excited. But for redraft, not this year. I'll take someone else at shortstop.
Okay. Steve, anything to add on Tovar?
I think it's still, you know, I mean, it's ADP 263, so it's not free, right? Like, it's an 18th, 17th round pick. So you're still, you know, trying to fill out your roster at that point, at least in the deeper leagues, you know, DC's, even like, you know, the standard TGFBI, things like that. You know, main events, all of that. It's just so like if you could get this, if what his tools are and how he hit at the minors come through at Coors Field, it's super exciting. And I'm probably going to want to take a flyer or two in a few scenarios, just because it's like, all right, you might be able to get this really good hitter that plays half of his home games at Coors Field, in the 20th round or whatever.
You know, yeah. 18th yeah. round. This is like when you're playing roulette and you just toss yeah. one chip in the middle on
exactly,
a number.
Exactly.
And you're like, yeah, but you know, I just want one share here in case this goes nuts.
I love playing the numbers in roulette. It's a horrible way to gamble, but hey, I do. So I'll be putting a few numbers on Tovar.
There you go. Yeah. And maybe if things do fall his way, he can creep up that order to Shelley's point and jump over, you know, Brennan Rogers or Grichuk or
ninth. Like, hopefully they play him ninth. Like, think about all these guys that we've been excited about at the Rockies and like they barely even play him. And like, then they just, you know.
Right. Hampson for 5 years.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Know, the list goes
on and on. And they are 24 in AAA and, you know, you forget about them.
Okay, well, let's keep rolling here because we got names. And this one, I think Steve and I are both a little nervous about this one, Shelley, because in our MILB draft that we're in the same league, we went ahead and hit the reach in the third round for Mr. Matt Mervis. And then the Cubs go out, get Hosmer, you know,
Trey Mancini.
Mervis. Yep. We're talking about Helium. This might have been the biggest riser last year of all prospects. But he did put up some insane numbers with 15 homers in just 57 games at AAA. So what are your thoughts on Mervis, Shelley? And feel free to make us feel better about that pick.
I mean, I was like super high on Matt Mervis coming into the year. Definitely from like a redraft standpoint, because it seemed that the Cubs were all in on Mervis. You know, he moved up, you know, three levels. They sent him to the Arizona Fall League. He just demolished every single level that he did. I'm just like, okay, yeah, the Cubs are totally for this, right? But then they go out.
In like a span of a week, they wipe that away.
Exactly. And everyone who was just like, fans of Nash Mervis, right? Was just like, mm-hmm. bah, 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 bah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think Hosmer's like really that great. I mean, I will be like a forever Mancini fan just mm-hmm. for everything that he has gone through yes. in life and all that totally. Stuff. And I do think that Mervis can beat out Hosmer at some point in the year. Because, I mean, the Cubs are, what, paying him, Hosmer just, like, the minimum.
Yeah, it's league minimum, yeah.
Exactly. So they can cut him at any type, you know, at any point. And if Mervis is just, like, you know, smashing baseballs in, like, AAA, they probably will. Because I do think that the Cubs kind of see themselves as kind of sort of competitive.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a chance, but it's going to be a month and a half before we see Mervis, which really makes me sad. But yeah, I mean, I was all in on Mervis and then, yeah, things happened.
Oh man. Yeah. They're so interesting because they were like a 1 foot in, 1 foot out club. And then, you know, bringing in Dansby Swanson, Mancini. And then, yeah, the Hosmer Mervis thing, it just, to me was a step backwards, but. As a Cardinals fan, I won't complain too much, but yeah, that's a bit of a bummer. Just for time's sake, I might skip Miguel Vargas because Steve and I have talked about him on every sure. show for the past 3 months, but he's in the mix. We haven't talked as much about Bo Naylor, so this is the third catcher we're talking about in this list, ADP of 312. It's another name with some buzz, but it's another name that, you know, theoretically is blocked with the Guardians bringing in Mike Zunino. Talk about Bo Naylor, Shelley. This is a guy who, again, I'm not as dialed in on the minors, but have heard his name come up a bunch, and he's got kind of the unique power speed combo at catcher. So curious your take on Bo Naylor.
Naylor is very, very unique. I was all in on him, you know, back in, you know, 2021. And then he just like fell on his face and I'm just like, okay, this is not going to go anywhere. And then, Orsillo just came in from the bathroom.
You're good. We get the pets all the time.
Oh yeah.
Okay, cool. And then, you know, and then last year that he just goes off, right? He, you know, he just hits like all the home runs, steals all the bases, and, you know, is a much better defender behind the plate. I really think that he is very interesting, but I would put him, you know, kind of like on the same space as Ohapi and Moreno. Because there is someone in front of him who has had, you know, major league starting time. But with Ohapi, Moreno, and Naylor, I do think that they are all the better offensive catcher than the person who is in front of them. So, I mean, I've been kind of just trying to snag up Bo Naylor here and there. Because, I mean, Mike Cusino, we all know who he is. Uh-huh. He just hits home runs and has a pitiful batting average. I think that Bo Naylor will definitely see more playing time, definitely in the second half.
So maybe these guys are like high upside catcher threes. If they don't get the job out of spring, you know, you could probably maybe move on, you know, then keep them in mind, like snag them up if they do run into more playing time down the year. You kind of wait and see there. I think that, you know, you probably want two guys with clear paths to playing time. At least Ohapi, I think you probably would be comfortable with catcher two, just because it seems like the Angels want to at least try to win it at least right away. And he's in an actual position battle, you know. I haven't seen anything out of Arizona with Moreno as far as like where they stand on that, and then Bo Naylor too. So I think I'd probably go in that order, with the caveat that these guys all look like pretty good catchers and guys that could hit behind the plate.
Yeah, and the caveat that you're getting a 4-round discount on Bo Naylor.
Yeah, so true.
If they are kind of tiered together, that might be something to think about as like a catcher three. So I like that. Steve, let's stick with you on Oscar Colas, who outfielder for the White Sox, and some good news. Unlike Mervis, when we drafted Colas, we saw shortly after that that there was a report that he has a chance to win the right field job over Gavin Sheets in the offseason, which is kind of like, you know, is that news? Doesn't everyone kind of have a chance typically? But it's good to know there is a path that they've acknowledged. So Colas is interesting. He's actually 24, so not quite as young as some of the other names we've thrown out. Do you think there's reason for excitement here, Steve, in redraft for Oscar Colas?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the projections look pretty good in limited playing time. I mean, Fangraph's depth chart and Steamer have him at like 20 and 19 home runs in 109 games, respectively. So the projection system by the power, like the bat has him at 12 home runs, but that's just in 92 games. So, you know, prorate that out. That's close to the 20, that Steamer and depth charts have. So, I think it's an exciting player. You know, he's hit for average, kept the K rate somewhat manageable. I mean, I know in AAA it was only a 7-game sample. He struck out a bit, but, you know, just 24% in 51 games at AA before that was at three levels last year, which you like to see, right? Like, yeah, exactly. Three levels in 1 year, not many prospects get to do that. I know that's probably a little different because it was, you know, his age 23 season, so they kind of got him through all those levels, but the power looks legit. I mean, he had, you know, an ISO of 257. At AA, so a lot of power in that bat. I think he came over. Correct me if I'm wrong, Shelley. Was he like a pitcher as well? Is that Colas? I think he's just gonna.
Yeah,
stick in the
he
outfield.
Was considered.
Yeah,
he was considered like the Cuban Otani.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He's just gonna hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Shelley, are you interested in Colas at all?
Oh yeah, I am. I mean, just hearing that news that, you know, the White Sox are at least, you know, thinking about putting him in right field from the start really gets me excited. Because, I mean, I like Gavin Sheets as like an idea, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, Oscar Colas is definitely more intriguing. And I would definitely, you know, take a shot on him versus Gavin Sheets in, you know, a deep league. So yeah, I was really excited to hear that news.
Yeah. Should add that this is way deeper than the names we've thrown out. His ADP is 480, but that should rise very fast as well with the news and with his bat, the power of Steve, you mentioned across three levels, but that totaled out at 117 games, and he had 23 homers there, hitting over 300 on the batting average in that time. So a lot that you like to see. It comes with kind of that small sample size, but I think it could be a popular kind of last round pick in standard drafts, and definitely like DCs and draft and holds a good name too that could pop. So we will flip to the other side of the ball with some pitchers, but we are going to take our second ad break and we will be right back. Okay, so looking at the top end arms, Shelley, our pitching philosophy here is we really like the window and redraft of like pick 50 to 100, kind of loading up. But then Steve he's been good the past couple. We've only done 2 years, but he's been good at plucking out some diamonds in the rough on pitching. And that's kind of what we're looking for here. And it seems like there's a good list of young arms this year that are fantasy relevant. But starting with, you know, the most prominent, I guess, in terms of the name value is Grayson Rodriguez, again with the Orioles, ADP 195. How do you feel about Grayson Rodriguez long-term and also for redraft, Shelley?
Long-term, I'm like really excited for him. From a redraft standpoint, an ADP of like 195 like scares me a lot. And just based on like what Baltimore currently has right now, I mean, they did make a trade today as we're recording this, right? Mm-hmm. So they have Gibson, Irvin, Bradish, Kremer, and Tyler Wells. And with how much time that, Rodriguez missed last year, I think that they're going to just kind of like let him get his groove, you know, feel his groove out in AAA and then bring him up when, you know, a couple months down the road, mm-hmm. which is totally fine. But with an ADP of like 195, that scares
me. That's not priced in. The fact that they still might handle him with kid gloves, that's not priced in.
Yep.
Yeah, that stings. I mean, how deep, Steve, do you think he'll fall? And, you know, it's just tough because it's like this is their window with Adley and with
he was like minutes away from being called up, it seemed like last year when he got that injury, right? He was so close to being called up, and then like he kind of like you didn't hear anything for a while, right? Like he wasn't pitching, like he kind of just, it was kind of concerning how silent they were on him and like how slowly they ramped it back. I mean, I don't blame them. You know, this is like the pitching prospect. It's, you know, the best pitching prospect that the Orioles have had since what? Like even before like Dylan Bundy, like, you know, like, I don't know. Like,
It's been a while.
Was Arrieta that big of a prospect for them? Was
Kevin Gausman Atlanta or the Orioles? I'm trying, or maybe
he was. Either. I don't know. He was the Orioles. Yeah, he was the Orioles. Yeah. He was an Orioles prospect. Yeah, yeah. He was a big time prospect too. So, and then who did they trade for Adam Jones? That's going back. Was that like? oh man,
get Alex Fast on the podcast.
That's gonna kill me. But there was a big prospect that ended up busting that they traded to Seattle for Aaron Jones. Another bad Seattle trade from back in the day. But I'll look it up while I'm doing that. But it's just so unfortunate because like Grayson's by far, I think, and you know, Shelley probably knows better than me, but like, he is the pitching prospect of like the last 2 years, right? Like he just has everything. Even last year in AAA, you know, 36% K rate, 7.7% walk rate. Like that's it. You know, he's him as everyone says on the internet, right? It's just,
probably the smart play, because that ADP just doesn't price in the fact that they're going to be cautious with him. But hey, I mean, you know, if you want to take him and hope that he's up in May, like, I just think that if they announce that he is not going to start in the majors, that ADP could come down, then I could be interested again, but it would have to be like around like closer to pick 300, I think.
I'm going to leave the fire going. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think when you look at the pitchers going after him, it's a no-brainer, right? At this point, you're not gonna take Grayson Rodriguez over John Gray, you know, names like that. So he'll probably fall, you know, five rounds, but definitely one to watch very closely in spring and just see what the headlines are, see what the health is for all the pitchers in front of him. And yeah, I guess the wait continues for Grayson Rodriguez.
Eric Bedard was the big pitching prospect from the Orioles.
There you go. Were you looking that up on your phone, or did you have like a magazine? It looked like you had paper in front of you.
Yeah. No, I looked up in the old newspaper. I did go to college in Baltimore and probably had a copy of The Sun when that trade did happen. But no, I looked it up on my phone.
Okay, so a player who's had better fortune is Edward Cabrera with Pablo Lopez moving in kind of a strange trade, but Cabrera is now pretty secure as SP4 with the Marlins. They do such a good job there. He showed great flashes last year, but also a little bit of wild command, and his ADP is 223, so about 20 picks after where Grayson's going right now. Edward Cabrera, Shelley, you know, I feel like there was a lot of hype last year. Is this a guy that you're going to have some shares of this year?
Definitely. I've been a fan since he's been in the minors. I just think that he has an extremely good, definitely two pitch mix, and he's still working on that third pitch. And it was like really good to see, like late last year, he was working with Sandy. Right. So that's always good to hear.
Good guy to work with.
That is a really good guy to work with. And then just in that park, right, it can just really mask any type of just issues. Right. And he has no options. So he's not going. So Miami cannot really, you know, put him back down in the minors, whatever. He's going to be in their rotation as long as he can stay healthy for the entire year. And I love that. I just really do believe in the talents of him. And, you know, him going 223, I'm willing to take a gamble and just banking on, you know, the Marlins pitching magic. They just have like,
it's gotta be top five, right? People talk about the Guardians, you know, but the Rangers have done some nice stuff. But yeah, the Marlins, it just seems like they get the most out of it for sure.
Yep.
And I guess to round out, well, we got at least one more that Steve has to talk about. Oh, but transitioning, I want to talk about Hunter Brown, because this was one that David Mendelsohn, when he was on the pod, had brought up as a kind of a sneaky pick, ADP 265. And there's so much to like here in terms of the stuff with Hunter Brown. Very fastball reliant, 97 miles per hour. But the question is, can he get a rotation spot? Because he's kind of SP6 right now with the Astros. Shelley, we've been talking about a lot of guys who have the talent, but maybe not the circumstance. What do you see with Hunter Brown? And do you think it's worth the bet at pick 265? To see if you can kind of snag an ace in the making here with Hunter Brown?
Honestly, it kind of like depends on what my pitching kind of looks like. Like if I have like some, you know, maybe like four like set guys, yeah, sure, I will take a gamble on Hunter Brown. But if I am looking for pitching, no, I'm not going to, because I mean, Houston's lineup, you know, their starting rotation is like pretty legit. Just as long as McCullers can stay healthy, I think it might be a couple months before we see Hunter Brown again, which makes me sad because I was really excited about what he was doing. He was like really improving his command. I loved what I saw. I just think that it might be a year too early to snag him.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve, I know I skipped you on the last one.
Okay.
Cabrera, Hunter Brown, anything to add on these guys?
I mean, I love the stuff for both of them. Like Cabrera, despite the walk issues that he had, like there was times where he like looked like he was figuring it out and might be just that tweak or two away that usually takes place in the off season. I mean, I know that they've been rumored to trade Pablo Lopez forever, but they clearly believe in Cabrera. I know, like Shelley said, they kind of don't have a choice because he doesn't have any more options, but they wouldn't just do that if they didn't like him. So, and like you said, it's a great organization to be in as a pitcher. So, Hunter Brown. Yeah. Like I loved Christian Javier last year, despite him being the sixth starter because, you know, with Verlander, coming back from TJ and just how the Astros handled that rotation. They went to six man a bunch. I don't know now that Verlander's gone. I don't know that they'll need to go out to that six man rotation that often, but hey, maybe they will. Maybe, you know, that, you know, Javier is, you know, was only at what 160 last year. You know, McCullers is another guy who's just always hurt. The sixth starter for Houston doesn't seem like too bad of a play. So despite that, I think Hunter Brown has the stuff that you want to take a risk. But like Shelley said, like it needs to be where you already have your staff built. And it's like, all right, I have got four guys that are going to make a start every fifth day. I could afford to have an upside flyer as Hunter Brown and, you know, pick 265.
Yeah, great upside flyer. I know I talked about it in past shows, but technique I like doing is Hunter Brown with Jose Urquidy because there's been some trade talks there. So that way, hopefully, you're securing some wins and some volume with the Astros. But yeah, if he can get the opportunity, look out. 106 innings in AAA last year. He had a 31% K rate. So this is, yeah, I like how Shelley framed it. Like, if you need pitching, no, but if you just want a lotto ticket, then he's a great one to go for. So the next one is what Steve really wanted to talk about, which is the guy that we took first in our Dynasty Miners mock, Andrew Painter.
Not a mock. That was a live draft, baby. That's a live draft with Shelley herself, the prospect expert. So
truly playing for keeps.
Exactly.
The opposite of a mock.
Yeah.
And Painter was, you know, we reached a little bit by the book at pick 12, but Steve had me sold. He was giving me the pitch. I was worried about the no such thing as a pitching prospect. Shelley, talk to us about Andrew Painter, if you're a believer in the Phillies' prodigy here.
I was, like, really upset that y'all took Painter. Like,
all right.
Everyone that I have talked to, I've watched him in a couple of games, just everything that I'm hearing. Painter's the dude. Painter is the dude. Like, he is... let me see. He is 19 years old and he hit AA. He has not had any struggles. He strikes out everyone. He is just no injury issues whatsoever so far. Like, he is the guy. And, you know, the Phillies have kind of like put out there, well, maybe he'll start, you know, the season and the rotation and stuff like that. And yeah, I am smitten with Painter. So yeah, that was a great pick. And I mean, you have, you know, on the pre-pro, you know, you have this ADP at like 516. That's way too low. Like, if you get him there, yes. I think Painter, honestly, I would rather have Painter than Rodriguez 100%.
Yeah. And I think, I think we might have taken him before Rodriguez, but yeah, there's the cluster there. And we'll talk about the third one, but Rodriguez, Painter, and if Painter gets the opportunity, that would be awesome. But Steve, I know you convinced me. I'm, you know, very happy and relieved to hear that Shelley has given it the full stamp of approval, but feel free to weigh in here, Steve, on your excitement for Andrew Painter.
I mean, the stuff speaks for itself. You go to any one of his player pages on the other side, it's just incredible, right? Like a 28 inning sample at AA when he was a 19 year old at AA, a 34% strikeout rate, a 2% walk rate. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's video game numbers. It's video game numbers what he's been doing. And what makes me even more excited is, like, the Philly, like Shelly said, like, oh, you know, in the off, earlier in the offseason, they said, you know, he might start. There was an article that came out today by Alex Coffey of the Philly Inquirer, that, you know, he's kind of been told, like, you know, to prepare the season as if he's pitching, that there's a good chance that he's pitching into October. So while that might not be that he starts the year, but, or is even a starter, but if he is that good, they're going to want him to start. But they have plans for him this year. Like, right, the Phillies are going all in. They signed Trey Turner. They went to the World Series last year. Like, they're going to be good. They want to be good. And it just, you know, with pitchers too, like, if the guys are ready, like, you don't want to waste their bullets at AAA, right? Like, you know, Tommy John's inevitable for seemingly everybody, right? Like, you want to get them in while you can. And if Painter is this good, like, it doesn't matter, you know, he's going to be 20 in March, it looks like, late March, early April. But it just seems like if he is this good and he looks to be all this good, like, he's going to contribute one way or the other. I don't know if it'll be a starter, but, you know, while he is this affordable in drafts, I will try to grab him in every single one, you know, just as the upside flyer. You know, if he doesn't come to the majors, like, right, you know, you could easily move on from that. But even in, like, a draft and hold, like, right, like, you draft guys that are going to get hurt or not play anyway, like, it's worth it. You know, he has the upside of anyone, right? Like, he's that good. Yeah.
And Bailey Falter, SP5, like, I think he could easily crack that rotation. And if you guys haven't seen him pitch, I mean, just go search Twitter for Andrew Painter.
He's six foot seven.
Yeah, the curve, the slider, and it looks so smooth on the mechanics, like we've talked about in the past. He just doesn't look like a guy who has to try very hard to be elite. So, yeah, that's a great name there. And, small correction. Grayson did go four or five picks before to Schwebze there, Christopher Weber. So a little stat correction there. Well, let's open it up here, guys, because Shelly – you know, I know we've got the pre-pro, as you mentioned it, with a list of names here, but I'm going to go off script briefly because you said in the draft that we did, you were able to grab some guys that you really liked. And I know first round you went Kyle Manzardo, a great hitter, first baseman, I believe, for the Rays. But open floor just on some of the players you drafted. Was it Manzardo, or is there another name in there that you just really love that we can share with the listeners that's on your radar as one of your guys?
Yeah, just give me a second to open up the draft.
I know. I'm putting you on the spot. Sorry. So, we had Manzardo, Jackson Holliday was second round, Zach Neto in third round, Harry Ford at catcher, who's another name that might be like a year away. I mainly, you know, I know we didn't have Manzardo on here, and that was one that I thought could be an interesting name to look into.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. So Manzardo, I really do think has a chance to make it to the Rays this year. I don't know how much power is going to be there. He's definitely hit over power. And I just think that's really going to work with what the Rays like to do. You know, they like to mix and match, but they just really just need to get any type of offense there. And another guy that I really do like, probably not for this year, but it's definitely like my favorite prospect, is Harry Ford with Seattle. He's a catcher, but he's has a bit of JT Realmuto to him, not from a power standpoint, but more from a running standpoint.
Okay.
And he has a really, really good hit tool. And when you read like reports, he is an extreme, just good clubhouse guy. Like, just something that made me smile was he would bring birthday cakes for anyone in the clubhouse
whose birthday it was.
That is just like, he's just like a dude, right? Yeah. He's a dude who can hit. He can steal bases. This is a guy that I am just like all in on. So I was just trying to like grab him in like any type of leagues. I think that he's going to be really great.
I thought you were going to say Neto because I wasn't that familiar with him when you did take him, and then I just like automatically fell in love with him. He was drafted last year, right, and made it to Double A
or to Double A. Yeah.
Or he like, 2021. He was right. Was it so? This was his first professional year, right? And he made it to Double A.
No, he was drafted in 2022 and he made it up to Double A.
Oh my God.
And it's unbelievable. I'm like, okay, this dude really has a chance to probably be the shortstop at some point this year for the Angels because their shortstop situation is a bit in flux. So yeah, Neto mm-hmm. is someone that is kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, those are great names and can totally – you know, squint and picture Manzardo just being right in there with like Wander Franco and just racking up hits. And it seems like the Rays, very on brand for the Rays. And Harry Ford, like you mentioned, the few rumblings I've heard about him is that, you know, at this time next year could very easily be hearing that he's the number one catching prospect in the game. So great dynasty name there. But yeah, I know I kind of flew off script there. And we're also, you know, well into the over the hour mark. So maybe we'll just throw out a handful of names here and see if you guys want to hit on any in particular. But some potential midseason call-ups that could be on the watch list for everybody. Daniel Espino, great pitching prospect. Bobby Miller as well. Francisco Alvarez and Jordan Walker. Let's put a pin in the list there across Espino, Miller, Alvarez, and Walker. Steve, is there any one of those four names that is really kind of jumping out at you?
I have loved Daniel Espino since like 2018, 2019, whenever he was drafted. Just the fact that he's part of the Cleveland organization got me excited. Like, you know, look at what they did with a guy who supposedly didn't have any stuff in Shane Bieber. Like, what can they do with a pitching prospect that has elite stuff? He's another guy that he got hurt and then you kind of didn't hear anything from last year. I think there would be a lot more hype if he had a full season and there was like rumblings for Espino to come up at the end of last year, but you know, unfortunately because of the injury that didn't happen. But you know, he's 22 now. He, you know, he made it up to Double A last year. I know it was just 18 innings, but I mean, I could see if he starts at AAA and, you know, gets a few starts under his belt, like the Guardians are going to want to get him into their rotation one way or the other sooner or later. Like he has the stuff to do it. So, I'm still pretty hyped on Daniel Espino. I know, I think the shine has worn off Bobby Miller since he struck out Ohtani with like 100 mile an hour fastball last spring training. When I got super excited about that. But, you know, Alvarez and Jordan Walker, too. Like, you know, I know, Van, you have to be super excited about what you have there in Walker. So I know you're going to pick him, but excited Absolutely. To see what you guys have to say about any of the lists, those names.
Yeah. Shelley, what do you think when you look at this list? Espino, Miller, Alvarez, Walker, which one kind of pops off the page for you?
I mean, for me, I think it's. I mean, I like all of them, but it's definitely Walker because I've been hearing like little rumblings here and there that, you know, he might break camp with the team, which kind of boggles my mind because I think that their outfield is like pretty legit so far. But I mean, he looked good like when I saw him down in Arizona in the, you know, Arizona Fall League and just everything that I've heard from him. It's just great. And just, you know, hearing those itty bitty rumblings just makes me, you know, excited because they could trade like an outfielder, right?
They should for pitching, guys.
Exactly. They need some pitching. So, yeah, I just out of those four, though, that Walker is definitely the guy who I would be trying to draft in redraft leagues right now.
Yeah. No, he's the one that. It's just, and obviously the homer bias aside, but just the power speed combo, the plate discipline. I mean, the ability to take a walk. I'm so excited for just when that chapter mm-hmm. comes, but I'm also nervous. I mean, I know, Steve, we just kind of reached on Lars Nootbaar, but I think the Cardinals are running risk to annoying a lot of fantasy managers this year with just how many mouths to feed. And that's kind of the Cardinal way, where they kind of rotate it all. So I think there could be a long list of guys that are just kind of shuffling, almost like the Dodgers have done in the past with like Chris Taylor, where they're, you know, playing 3 out of 5 games. But yeah, in terms of the talent, Walker is, you know, it's hard to argue that he won't be, you know, top 2 round type of guy in the next 2 or 3 years. So love that. Love that you highlighted him as well, Shelley. So let's move to the last group. And Yuri Perez was the pitcher that I kind of teased earlier, because Grayson Rodriguez, Andrew Painter, and then I've heard Yuri Perez kind of lumped in this group of three for truly like the top pitching prospects in the game right now. And then we also have Zach Veen, Anthony Volpe, who had a fantastic quote-unquote down season last yeah. year, and Noel V. Marte, who is one that is, you know, the sheen's wearing off a little bit, but I think there's still a ton to like there. So, Steve, let's go back to you on this group. Is there any one of the four that really has your attention that you want to hit on?
I really like Yuri Perez. I've kind of swooned enough about pitchers when, I'm a big tin snap. There's no such thing as a pitching prospect guy, so I have to go elsewhere. Zach Veen wasn't on my radar that much, I guess, until I think it was Daniel Port that drafted him in our dynasty startup that we had. And it's just pretty exciting. He seems like he could be slash is one of the biggest risers of the last few years. And, you know, I'm a sucker. I love to see a guy in Coors come up and just mash. You know, like Carlos Gonzalez was one of my favorite draft picks for years. You know, Arenado too coming up. Like, it's so easy to ooh and ah over a great hitter in Colorado. And I think that, you know, if the next one isn't Tovar, it might be Veen.
No, I love that. Yeah, I'm just trying to search him up. There's a second Zach Veen out there, so be careful, folks. So this is Z.
Yeah, that's like the Julio Rodriguez Veen that I was going to fake draft in our league. You know, I think he's a catcher on Oakland.
We should build like a roster, you know, with each position of kind of the duplicates that people accidentally got. Like, I think somebody in my home league one time drafted Vlad Gutierrez thinking it was Vlad Guerrero, like early on. I love those. So back to the topic, though. Shelley, if you could round us out between Perez, Zach Veen, Anthony Volpe, and Noel V. Marte, which one of these four is on your radar as potentially an impact player this season?
For this season, I think that I'm going to go with Perez, because I've seen him pitch a couple times, and it's really, really good. The only thing that just kind of puts him below, you know, Painter and Rodriguez for me, really was the injuries. I mean, I know that Rodriguez dealt with injuries as well, but I just kind of liked Rodriguez more than Perez at the time. And then who knows like what the Marlins are going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So out of the four, I'm definitely, from a redraft standpoint, I'm definitely intrigued with Perez. Veen, I'm a tad bit scared of because it is a bit more stolen bases versus power. And I don't know how that's really going to translate to the majors.
Yeah.
Even with it being in Coors, I don't know. I'm just always like skittish with Coors prospects.
Yeah, no, you should. You should be. It's a hard organization to believe in.
Even yeah. Rodgers, who got the time, it's just like, can we believe it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's just something goes wrong.
Yeah. And then with the last two, Marte, I mean, the Reds are like just stacked to the gills, like with all the trades that they've done, with a really extremely you know, intriguing middle infield, you know, prospects. I don't know if Marte is going to make it there.
Not probably not this year, right? Like the other guys might be more of stash worthy, at least the first group too. This is more probably down the road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to Volpe, it's not that I don't like him. I'm just worried how he's going to take to Yankees fans, Yankee Stadium. Because as a Red Sox fan, I know that Red Sox fans can be extremely harsh. I know that Yankees fans can be extremely harsh to players when they don't, you know, perform right away. And
he's a Jersey kid too. So Yankees fans have known about him forever, you know, even before he blew up as a prospect, you know, so
yeah, I just hope that doesn't get to him, because I do think that he could be a good player. I'm just kind of scared about what happens if he kind of scuffles.
Look at what happened to his prospect pedigree. Like when he kind of started off a little slow this year, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like it was still good season. And it was almost like, is Volpe still, yes, he's still really good. It's still a good prospect, but because he's the Yankee, you know? Yeah.
It's funny that when he did struggle over the in AAA over, you know, it's only 100 plate appearances, but the 30% strikeout rate, you know, that high strikeout rate and Yankee Stadium does not mix well. Yeah. You know, it's like if you're going to have that volatility.
They booed Jeter, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But no, Volpe 21, I think that's one that, you know, everyone will be watching when that debut comes. But those are great names, great breakdowns, guys. And that wraps us up for the show. I know it was a full slate of names in a full 90-minute run. So, Shelley, we want to thank you sincerely again for the time and the wisdom on some of these youngsters. But, guys, I think are we just going to go back to watching PitchCon or, you know, get back in some new drafts now that the season is officially underway, according to Steve?
Yeah, I think it's time to start doing some drafts. And I know, Van, we've hinted at it on Twitter in an episode, and we got some interest in setting up a listener league, so we can get on that. I think we should probably do a joint DC too, split a team there. I know we're still in the middle of the pro draft in this Dynasty League. I think we're in trouble because, like, you know, we wanted to get someone on who knows prospects and, you know, do a prospect free draft show that we've done every year now. And, like, you know, we wanted to get Shelly, and she's awesome in this league. So we're probably in trouble that, like, we need to have Shelly on our prospect show and she's in our dynasty league. Like, right. Like, a little bit concerning for us, but hey, hopefully we did. You like the painter pick, which I guess bodes well, but seriously, Shelly, thank you. Like, you know, before I followed everyone and everyone in fantasy baseball and this community blew up, like, you were the first prospect person that I ever followed and still do follow. And, you know, anyone that you talk about is immediately on my radar. So thanks again for coming on. And it's honestly an honor, and, you know, shout out to all of the work that you have done and continue to do. It's just great stuff. It's been awesome following you throughout the years, and cool to, you know, be on the same team and work at Pitcherless with you.
Yeah. Wow. Wasn't expecting that, but thank you. Thanks for just honestly just listening to what I have to say. I mean, that's why I kind of tweet out what I tweet out. You know, I just like talking baseball.
It's funny because, like, in our draft chat and our Discord, like, Estavio, who's the commissioner and kind of organized all this, it's like anytime that you tweeted, like, he would put it in the chat and, like, and then that player would go and, like, you would just use that for all the info. Yeah. So it's like, oh, Shelly tweeted
twirling his mustache over there, Estavio. Yeah. Oh gosh, it's so true. Okay, well, we don't want to take up any more of your time, Shelly, but thanks again so much, echoing what Steve said, and I'm sure the listeners all enjoyed as well. So thanks, you guys, for tuning in to episode 85. Follow us on the Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at VanVerified, and Steve is at Stav8818, and our special guest, Shelly Verstrait, is at ShellyV_643. That wraps us up for prospects for redraft leagues. We will talk to you guys in 2 weeks. Until then, enjoy draft season.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.